Dr. Bloom and friends. I must begin by saying how glad I am to be here in St. James with you all this evening. A little earlier on, Dr. Bloom invited all those who had not been here before, not been in St. James and not been to alternatives, to put up their hands. Well, I should have put up my hand, because I haven't been here before. I haven't been inside this building before. Of course, I have glimpsed it from the outside on a number of occasions on my way to the Royal Academy. Sometimes, of course, I glimpsed it behind a multitude of colourful stalls. And I believe on one of the occasions, I even had a stroll around those colourful stalls. But I must admit, I didn't actually find my way into St. James or into alternatives. So I'm all the more glad to be here this evening. And I'm glad to have been able to witness the little preliminaries, the rigmarole, as I believe they were called, and especially to witness the lighting of the candles. I was asked to name a quality which could be associated with one of those three candles. This isn't really quite in my notes, but I'm going to say it anyway. I was asked to think of a quality, and of course, as you heard, the quality of which I thought was courage. Because I thought, well, probably everybody who comes here says something like peace, or compassion, faith. I thought, well, I'll be a little bit different. I don't suppose many people would think of courage. But I also thought of courage for a very definite reason. The reason being that I think that in the world of today, if we're concerned in any way with the upholding of any sort of spiritual values, we do need a great deal of courage. Love isn't enough. We need courage to implement that love and act upon it. Truth isn't enough. Well, yes, in a sense, truth is enough, but we also need the courage to stand up for the truth, to stand by the truth, in the midst of a world which only too often seems to deny the truth. So I was very glad to be able to witness and, to that extent, to take part in the candle lighting ceremony this evening. I was also glad to witness and take part in it because, in a way, I felt myself to be on familiar ground, because in the context of Buddhist worship, very often we light and we offer candles. Most often we offer them to the Buddha. And in some forms of Buddhism, we offer them reciting a little verse, which may be translated something like this: this light, this candle, I offer to the Buddha, the enlightened one, who destroys the darkness of ignorance. So the lighting of a candle, the lighting of candles has this sort of association for Buddhists, this sort of association for me. Light is, of course, a universal symbol. We find this symbol in all religions, in all spiritual traditions. I remember during my days in India, I often had the opportunity of witnessing the Hindu Diwali, or Diwali, the festival of lights. And on that occasion, it was very, very interesting, very beautiful to see that the windows and the doors of all the houses in the neighborhood would be just lit up with rows and rows of little lamps. Of course, they were all oil lamps, And they presented all the more beautiful a sight when, in that particular town, as was the case still in those days, there was no electricity, no gas, just little oil lamps. And the whole of the town, the whole of the city, would be illuminated with rows and rows of these little oil lamps in the windows, on the doorsteps, on the roofs, on the edges of the flat roofs, all over the town, all over the city, all representing, all symbolizing, for pious Hindus, the triumph of light over darkness, the triumph of the forces of good over the forces of evil. Light in Buddhism represents especially spiritual knowledge, represents what we may describe as transcendental insight, represents the higher wisdom. The Buddha, after his enlightenment, after his attainment of enlightenment, is represented as saying to his disciples, "There arose in me knowledge, there arose in me wisdom, there arose in me light." And it's therefore perhaps not surprising, perhaps it's not just a coincidence, that the Buddha is known in English as the Enlightened One. Though not, of course, in the sense of 18th century humanistic enlightenment. And of course, it's about the Buddha that I'm speaking this evening. And at this point, I have a little confession to make. I have to confess that, glad as I am to be here in St. James this evening, it's a very long time since I was in a church at all, apart, of course, from sightseeing. And it's a very long time indeed since I actually spoke in a church. I was actually looking up in my records the last time this happened, and I discovered the last time was on Sunday, the 15th of July, 1987, which is almost exactly 7 years ago. And on that occasion, on that Sunday, that Sunday morning, I delivered a sermon in the chapel of King's College, Cambridge. And I remember this occasion. I don't so much remember what I actually said. I very often don't. But I remember the congregation. Because the congregation, which was about 300 strong, consisted, as far as I could see, mainly of American tourists. And they hadn't come for me. Oh no. They'd come to hear the music. They'd come to hear the famous King's College Choir. But of course, they had 40 minutes of me first. But anyway, be that as it may have been, this evening I'm going to do more or less what I did on that occasion 7 years ago in the chapel of King's College, Cambridge. Since I'm in Rome, so to speak, hope I can say that in an Anglican building, huh? Since I'm in Rome, so to speak, I'm going to do what Rome does, huh? Or at least what I think Rome may still do. I'm going to give a sermon on a text. Perhaps it's not quite what trendy C of E vicars, even rectors, you know, do nowadays. And I must admit, incidentally, but that for quite a few years, I was myself rather prejudiced against this word sermon. Well, I didn't like to use it. I avoided it. I didn't like, for instance, to hear the Buddha's discourses to his disciples referred to as sermons. People will sometimes speak of the Buddha's first sermon. I didn't like that. But in recent years, I've changed my mind. I've concluded that sermon is, after all, a good old English word. It comes to us by the old French, from the Latin sermo, or discourse, probably from serere, which means to join together. So not such a bad old word after all, we may think. Of course, some of our greatest English literature exists in the form of sermons, believe it or not. One thinks, for instance, of the sermons of John Donne and of Jeremy Taylor. One thinks even of the sermons, also, of Cardinal Newman.